thanks for the introduction. I'm very happy again. So today I'm going to talk about a new class of symmetry, which is called non-breakable symmetry. And I'm going to talk about how to compute their anomalies, or how to understand what kind of dynamical implications can we derive from this kind of linear symmetries. Okay, so let me first introduce the connection between symmetry and a point of view that we can use symmetry as topological operators. So in most courses, we learn that symmetry can be understood as conserved charge of your quantum system. So it's some conserved charge that commutes the Hamiltonian, for instance. But we can rephrase such conservation law, meaning the charge is constant in time, as the symmetry generator can write it as. So we can also rephrase the conservation law, namely the charge is constant in time, as the generator of the symmetry transformation being topological. So let me explain that a little bit. So the symmetry generator is like the exponential of the conserved charge, where alpha is the transformation parameter. So let's try to rephrase the condition that the charge is constant in time as some kind of topological condition on the generator. So the generator is essentially just given by like the explanation of the conserved charge. Okay. So being topological means that you can deform the like the geometry that supports the generator in whatever way you like, as long as it does not like cross any other operators. Implied here, you can deform the generator from like time one slice in space time to time two slice in space time. And topological means that the value of the operator is not changed under such deformation. And because the value of the generator is just a conserved charge, so it simply means that the conserved charge is constant in time. So that's the usual conservation law that you know.
Okay, so let me just repeat again. So we can view symmetry and its conservation law as the generators of the symmetry transformation being topological. And therefore, we can view the possible symmetries in a given quantum system as the possible topological defects or topological operators in the quantum system. And the topological operators can support on like various dimensions. For instance, you can have a topological operator that is supported on a line or a surface or a volume. And if the geometry of the operator has codimension n, well, the terminology is that we call it an n-1 full symmetry. So this is just some terminology.
Question?
Yeah.
So strictly speaking, this new perspective imposes a stronger condition than the conventional perspective. In the conventional perspective, I only require.
Yeah, that's true. So if so, right? So. You can relax the condition of operator being topological by saying that it's only topological in certain direction. But in this talk, I'm going to focus on operators that are like topological or invariant under deformations in all the directions.
So yeah. What are the examples where the conventional picture applies but the new picture doesn't apply?
Well, for instance, you can have a like symmetry where the operator is like topological only when you deform it in certain direction, like a very common fractal model, for instance. So like,
what is the conventional picture?
The operator is supported in a constant time slice.
Oh.
Well, I mean,
I don't know if there are really many cases where that happens and it's not topological like this.
Well, you just mentioned some cases.
Well, so, I mean, in that, if you talk about, well, so first of all, I'm going to focus on like relativistic system. Okay, and you have Lorentz symmetry, so we can rotate and time and space like any way you like. And I'm going to focus on like operators that are fully topological. So like you can deform operator whatever way you like, and the value of operator does not change. Yeah, so that will be the case I'm going to talk about. Yeah. Yeah, and so let me also mention that under this point of view, you can think of transformation on some operator as following. So let's say you want to perform a symmetry transformation on some like operator O. So let me open the pointer.
So just for clarification, yeah. co-dimension is in space-time.
In space-time, yeah, yeah. Thank you. Yeah. So let's say you want to transform this operator O, which I draw in blue dot. So we can implement transformation by surrounded with the topological operator. And you can move the topological operator like passing through this blue dot. So now the blue dot is outside of the topological operator. Then the blue dot will acquire a symmetry transformation. So that's the way to think of symmetry transformation in terms of those topological operator. Okay, so now we can try to understand. So let's try to understand what kind of structures can a symmetry have. Like we can try to think of it in terms of those topological operators. Like what kind of structure can topological operators have? So the first structure is fusion rule, namely how the operators fuse with each other. So there are two classes of fusion rule. So the first class, we can fuse one topological operator A with another, and we will produce another topological operator, and this fusion will obey a group multiplication law. And in particular, every topological operator in this class have an inverse. And we will call such topological operators or the corresponding symmetries as invertible symmetries if it obeys this kind of group law fusion rule. The other class is when the fusion of the topological operator does not obey such group multiplication law. Namely, if you fuse one topological operator A with another B, you can produce different outcomes, like lots of possible topological operators can be the outcome of the fusion. And for such symmetries, the fusion rule does not have an inverse and is called non-invertible symmetry. So that's just terminology about the fusion rule. And in this talk, I'm going to focus on the second kind of fusion rule, namely operators that obey this non-invertible fusion. Another structure is the cohesion function of the topological operators, namely like the braiding of the topological operators, such as braiding of like two line operators in 2 plus 1D spacetime. Or more, and there can be more complicated braiding, like the braiding of three surfaces, like three topological surfaces in 3 plus 1 dimension spacetime, studied in many papers, like by Eos and also by Ben Yoshida. Another structure is whether the fusion of the topological operators is associative or not. For instance, so imagine there are like three topological line defects, like these three lines here. And you can, so let's try to fuse those three lines. You can first fuse the first two, and then the third, or you can first fuse like the second one and the third one, and then fuse with the first one. And in general, those two configurations of performing the fusion can be different. And for instance, they can be different by some like complex number. And if that's the case, we say the fusion is not associative, or there's a non-trivial associator that relates these two different configurations. Another structure is whether the fusion is commutative, namely, like if you fuse A with B, in general, it can be different from fusing like B with A. Okay, so let me give you a concrete example of systems that has non-invertible symmetry. So the system, okay.
What is fusion?
Sorry?
What is fusion?
Fusion, okay, right. So fusion just means that, so if you have two objects, you can try to like combine them to get a different object.
Then why it could be not authoritative?
Sorry?
Why it could be not authoritative if it depends at what you find.
Right. So so when you perform the fusion, you have to think about a junction. Like there's a junction, like put together like two defects and outcome another defect. So that's the junction I'm talking about, and this junction describes the fusion. Okay, and in principle, this fusion can be non-associative.
Why? I thought it's just like three of them together.
Victoria. Well, it depends on how you like fuse them. Like yeah, you can depend on like a trajectory.
Why just put them together like the non-associativity is up to lower dimensional stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah. So this non-associativity is up to like something like Dacre Taylor junction, for instance. If you talk about like, so if the operators are like supporting on a point instead of a line, like the case you are talking about, then you cannot have this kind of structure. It's just be like associative, like OPE, yeah. So this really occurs when you talk about like topological operators that are supported like on a line or surface or domain wall. Yeah.
Sorry, I have a question. Mm-hmm. You mean like we can decorate the junction point with some symmetric defect associated with the d minus one form u one symmetry, right? Something like the trivial symmetry, so called.
I can think of the associator as some. So one way to think about the associator is the following. So imagine you can try to think about a movie. Like you start from this configuration, and you like evolve in time. Then gradually it will become another configuration like this, and you can try to interpolate the defect like as it evolves in time. Then at some point you will find all the defects will intersect on some point or some like hierarchical dimension locus, and you can think of the associator as living on this intersection locus. So everyone's happy? Okay. Okay. So if everyone is happy about those kind of structures, then so let me try to give an example that illustrates some of the features. So let's consider a critical easing model in 1+1 dimension. And so the model will just be like fluctuating spins. And the theory has a duality. Well, you can think of it as a duality symmetry, which is usually called Kermit-Schwanian duality symmetry. And what this duality does is exchange the spins, like small magnet here, with a domain wall, where like on the right-hand side of the domain wall, you just flip all the spins. Or on the left-hand side, you have to choose an orientation. So, and this duality exchange like a single spin with this kind of domain wall. So you can imagine the duality as like jointed by this red line here. And when you pass the red line through the spin, like this blue dot here, it will become a domain wall, like this green dot here. And this dashed line, you just flick the spins on one side of the domain wall. Okay. And this D is this duality symmetry. And this duality symmetry is a very weird symmetry, namely it has this non-invertible fusion rule. If you fuse the duality symmetry with itself, like this domain wall with itself, it does not give you a unique answer. But rather, it's possible that if you fuse the two duality domain wall, you can get a trivial defect, namely it just does not transform anything, or you can get a defect that just flips all the spins. So there are two possible fusion outcomes, namely the fusion rule is non-invertible. And let's say example of quantum system with this kind of non-invertible symmetry. And the importance of this kind of symmetry is that, so this kind of non-invertible symmetries are very common in quantum systems. Like you can find such symmetries in standard model like gauge theories, or they can present in some lattice gauge theory models. They can even present in like Maxwell theory, which we learn in undergraduate course. It can also present in some supersymmetric version and like higher dimension field theories. So such theories are very commonplace in like many quantum systems. And it's important to understand what kind of implication to a dynamics can we learn from those kind of symmetries. And that's why I'm going to tell you today. So in those symmetries, in those theories, the non-invertible symmetry obeys similar like non-invertible fusion rule. So if you fuse the domain wall that joins the symmetry with itself, or if you reverse the orientation, then you can get a collection, a sum of different fusion outcomes. So it would be a sum of different symmetry operator. And in those systems in four space and dimension, the right-hand side of those fusion rule will be sum of like operators supporting on like closed surfaces living on the domain wall.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Do you require each term on the right hand side to be group like?
Well, that will depend on the particular theory we talk about. But for those examples like Maxwell theory, standard model-like theories, the each term on the right-hand side will be invertible. Yeah. So only that this domain word D is non-invertible. So that's similar to this Kermit's one duality, like in 1+1D model. Yeah. But you can consider a more general fusion rule. Yeah. Okay, so in this talk, I'm going to focus on the system where this kind of non-invertible symmetry is unbroken. Namely, you do not like explicitly or like spontaneously break the non-invertible symmetry. I want to understand what kind of like phases of matter this symmetry can tell us. So for instance, having the symmetry can tell us that maybe the system is in like symmetric garbage phase, such as like critical phenomena, like longitudinal liquid or like some fixed point or like super young Mu model. Or maybe the system is actually in some gap phase that preserves the symmetry. For instance, if the system has long range entanglement, it's important in like performing topological quantum computation and it's like common in like fractional quantum Hall system. Or maybe the system is gap, but it only has short range entanglement, so it has trivial dynamics. But such systems are still important. For instance, they can be like topological insulators or topological superconductors. So the question is, what kind of criteria are like the boundary of those regions? So like what kind of features of the symmetry can we tell like the system has to be in garbage phase, or maybe the system must have non-trivial dynamics? And the talk is about discovering like what's the criteria of those boundaries. Now, if the symmetry is invertible, and namely the operators obey the topological operators obey group law fusion, then any non-trivial symmetry structures of the topological operators will tell you the system must have non-trivial dynamics. So it has been like a lot of literature about this. For instance, like Cullen-Harvey anomaly inflow and Tooth anomaly matching condition, and the boundary anomalies for like SPT phases. But this statement is simply not true for non-invertible symmetry. So let me give you a counterexample. Well, there are actually many counterexamples. So one counterexample is in 1+1 dimension. So let's consider a symmetry like similar to the Kermit's one duality. So, well, it's called Z2 times D2 times Brillouin Yamagami symmetry. So it has a domain wall similar to the Kermit's one domain wall. And it obeys a non-invertible fusion rule. If you fuse two such domain wall, you can produce different fusion outcomes where this eta 1 and eta 2 are invertible symmetries like the Z2 times Z2 invertible symmetries. And there's a version of such symmetry such that this domain wall D is non-associative. So if you fuse the domain walls in different ways, this different fusion configuration can differ by a minus sign. And this symmetry with this non-trivial associator or non-associativity can actually be realized in trivial dynamics, like just trivial short-range entangled phase. It has been discussed in the paper by Thorngren and Yifan Wang.
Question?
Yeah.
Here, by trivial associativity, what do you mean?
Oh, I mean non-trivial associativity. Yeah. Let me be precise. So if you fuse the domain wall like in this way or that way, they will differ by a minus one.
But can this be removed by a gauge?
No. Yeah. So there's a physical distinction between those two configurations. Yeah. So there's a version of this Z2 times Z2 symmetry with this non-trivial non-associativity. Yeah.
For this example, does it at least require you to be in non-trivial SPT or?
Well, it's a you have to look at the paper, but
okay.
But it's a short range integral phase. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And in general, it's a hard problem like to know like what kind of structure like the non-invertible symmetry can have such that it can imply the system have non-trivial dynamics. And in the previous literature, people only know how to do it in like 1+1 dimension. And they have to use very like complicated mathematical tool like which they call fiber functor. So it's very hard problem to solve, even in 1+1 dimension. And in this talk, I'm going to provide a simple solution And that works, well, that can work in all space time dimension, does not have to be like 1 plus 1d. In particular, I'm going to focus on like 3 plus 1 space time dimension.
When you define an anomaly to be an obstruction to gauging, how does that fit in with?
Right, so that's another story. Yeah, so in this talk, when I say anomaly, so the word just means some consequence on the dynamics, like some objection to having trivial dynamics. And in general, for invertible symmetry, this kind of thing is the same as the objection to gauging, but the concepts are different if you talk about non-invertible symmetry. And because I'm interested in like application to dynamics, so I'm just going to say anomaly just however objection to trivial having a trivial dynamics. Yeah.
Just to clarify, so for these counter examples, can the non-invertible symmetries be gauged?
Yeah.
They can be gauged.
They can. Yeah. I mean, you can have some like you can have some examples for. So in 1 plus 1 dimension, there are some examples of non-invertible symmetry that cannot be realized in trivial dynamics, but nevertheless, they can be gauged. Yeah. So those two concepts are really different when the symmetry is non-invertible. So in this talk, when I say anomaly, I do not mean objection to gauging. I just mean some consequence on the dynamics, like some objection to having trivial dynamics.
Later, will you explain why sometimes these two are the same, sometimes they are not the same?
Well, there's a wonderful paper by Shuhan and his collaborators about this kind of thing, and you should take a look. Yeah, but I'm not going to explain that in detail.
When you say trivial dynamics, do you just mean that there's a boundary which can be fully gapped or something like that?
Well, that can be one example. Well, trivial dynamics just mean like short range in entangled state, like SPD state. Like whether some SPD state can realize such symmetry. Yeah. Any more questions? Okay, so let me just tell you what's my solution, or at least an outline of my solution. Okay. So the way to address the question, namely to understand what's the implication on dynamics, is to view the symmetry as a topological quantum field theory or topological order in one dimension higher. So all the symmetry structures like braiding, fusion, associativity can be summarized in a topological quantum field theory or topological order in one dimension higher. So what's the relation between like this TKFT? Well, I'm going to call it TKFT. What's the relation between this TKFT and the symmetry? So we can think of symmetry on the boundary of this book, TKFT in one dimension higher, and where the symmetry on the boundary, namely the topological operators on the boundary, are related to the topological operators in the TKFT in two ways. So either they arise as like the ending locus of a operator in the book on the boundary, or they can arise when the operator on the book can like move parallelly to a like boundary and just restricted to the boundary. So that's kind of two ways you can think of symmetry as topological operators in a TKFT in one dimension higher. Now, with this perspective, the possible dynamics with unbroken symmetry can be rephrased as the possible dynamics on the boundary of this particular TKFT that describes the symmetry. For instance, if we know that this book TKFT does not have a like symmetric gap boundary condition, like there's no gap boundary of the TKFT that preserves the symmetry, then we know that if the system has the symmetry, then it cannot be in the like symmetric gap phase.
So here by unbroken symmetry, do you mean symmetry that's not spontaneous?
Yeah, does not spontaneously broken or explicitly broken. Yeah.
So if it's spontaneously broken, do you have any constraint?
Well, there's no constraint. I mean, you can always spontaneously break the symmetry. Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm going to focus on like the case where the symmetry is not spontaneously broken. I mean, it's very hard to constrain first order phase transition. So yeah. And for instance, if we know that this book TKFT cannot have a trivial boundary, then if we have such symmetry, the corresponding symmetry, it means that the system must have non-trivial dynamics. Yeah. So that's kind of the tool I'm going to use. Okay, so what do we know about boundaries of TKFT? Well, the question has been studied by many people, like by Kopfsting and Solina, and Michael Levin, and Brad Cashley, and lots of people like Xiaogang Wen and Liang Kong. then, and basically the gap boundary condition of the TKFT correspond to the Lagrangian algebra, or something called Lagrangian algebra in TKFT. Or if the TKF, if all the operators in a TKFT obey like invertible fusion, so you can think of the operators as forming a group, like the group multiplication is the fusion, then those Lagrangian algebra is called Lagrangian subgroup of the TKFT. And the symmetric gap boundary condition is the those gap boundary condition that preserve the symmetry, and it can be translated to the Lagrangian subgroup that preserve the symmetry. And this kind of concept, like this Lagrangian subgroup concept, is relatively easy to study in bulk TKFT that have like abelian fusion rule. So I'm going to call such TKFT as abelian TKFT. And so in this case, Lagrangian subgroup will be just some very simple criteria that you can study. And that will be the case I'm going to focus on in the talk. So what are those Lagrangian subgroup? Well, roughly speaking, so you can think of Lagrangian subgroup as a set of like topological operators in the bulk, such that when you condense those topological operators, all the operators in the TKFT become trivial. So let me try to unpack this a little bit. So we can think of so for instance, if the TKFT only has like particles, like or line operators, then the Lagrangian subgroup means like a set of bosons where you can condense. Well, the boson does not have any statistics, so you can condense it. And it's like an isotropic condition with respect to the, like the braiding or the statistics of the operator. And it's a set of bosons such that when you condense the boson, all the other excitations are confined or they disappear. And this means that all the other excitations must braid naturally with at least one of the bosons. So all the other excitations are removed after the bosons are condensed. Okay. So that's the Lagrangian subgroup. And so I'm going to give an example in case this is not clear. Yeah.
So if you have a gap boundary, how do you know if it's a trivial dynamics as opposed to some gap topological?
Yeah, I'm going to talk about it talking later. Yeah, you have to choose. So, well, first of all, you have to choose some polarization, and then you can talk about the dynamics of the on the boundary. Yeah, I'm going to talk about it later. Okay, so just to illustrate the concept, let me just work out an example in like the simple Z2 gauge theory in 2+1 dimension. So simple Z2 gauge theory in 2+1 dimension can be described by the BF theory. So it can be described by like a mixed transmitter between two U1 gauge fields A and B. And those are like Lagrangian multipliers that constrain their holonomy to be like Z2 value. And I'm going to call the western line of the Z2 gauge theory as like the western line of like A. And there's also a monotic line operator, which is the western line of this this dual field, small b. And generally can consider like combination of these two, and we can label the set of operators or the set of particles as like electric, as carrying some electric charge or multi-charge, and in general the particle will have some non-trivial statistics. Okay. So now we can ask what kind of topological boundary condition the theory has. And so from field theory, we know it can have like Dirichlet boundary condition for like this A gauge field or Dirichlet boundary condition for the like this B gauge field. So the Dirichlet boundary condition for the A gauge field corresponds to the E condensed boundary. So the electric charge, which is the western of A, becomes trivial on the boundary. And the Dirichlet boundary condition of B is like the M condensed boundary, where this western of B, which is the magnetic charge, becomes trivial. So I have two Lagrangian subgroups. And we can, so this is Lagrangian subgroup correspond to a topological boundary condition, like these two topological boundary conditions. And the subgroups are generated by like the electric charge or the magnetic charge. So we can think of Lagrangian subgroups as the like the particles that are condensed on the boundary. So this is for this one, the Lagrangian subgroup is generated by the electric charge, the other is the magnetic charge. Okay. So now once we understand this boundary condition, this topological boundary condition, let's try to use this topological field theory to make some statement about dynamics of symmetry, of non-inverter symmetry. Okay, so well, the TCAP, this little gauge theory is in two plus one dimensions. So let's try to study like system with some symmetry in one plus one dimension boundary. So the symmetry I'm going to talk about is exactly a symmetry in the easing model. So it has a domain word D, and there's a Z2 symmetry eta, that's grace to identity. And the fusion of D with itself can produce either the, like the trivial operator or this eta. So D is an example of non-vital symmetry that I talked about earlier. Well, D is just a Kermit-Swanian duality symmetry. So now we are going to ask, suppose we know quantum system has this kind of easing symmetry, like this eta and D, and we know they are not like spontaneously broken, what kind of dynamical implication can we derive from those just those symmetries?
Okay. A question, why do we need the model to be critical?
So in principle, the symmetry can be present in like many quantum systems, but it just happened that this particular symmetry is present in the critical easing model.
Oh, I think for easing model, even if it's not critical, you also have those two symmetries?
Well, I mean, if you want the model to have this Kermit-Swanian duality, you want to see that the critical.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Oh, sorry. I mean, it always has this spin flipping symmetry, but if you're on Kermit-Swanian duality, it has to be at a critical point. Yeah. Okay. So let's try to think about those kind of easing symmetry from this bulk TKFT perspective. Okay. So how do we relate this to like this Z2 gauge theory in the bulk? Well, we can try to think about the TKFT as arising from gauging a Z2 spin flipping symmetry. So and if we gauge spin flipping symmetry, this kind of easing symmetry So first of all, this kind of easing symmetry contains this D, this Kermit-Swanian duality symmetry. And this duality symmetry, well, because it exchanged the spin with the domain wall, it means that the theory is invariant under gauging the Z2 symmetry. And so if you try to gauge the Z2 symmetry, like both on the boundary in the bulk, on the boundary you have the same model because you have this Kermit-Swanian duality, but in the bulk you got a Z2 gauge theory. And this means that any system with this kind of easing symmetry can live on the boundary of the Z2 gauge theory in 2 plus 1 dimension. Okay. And we can ask, finally, how to translate the symmetry, like the easing symmetry from the bulk perspective. Right. So first of all, this Z2 flipping, like spin flipping symmetry, you can think of as the Z2, like you sort of move the like multi-line in the Z2 gauge theory, like parallel to the boundary, and it will be the Z2 spin flipping symmetry. But what about this like capital D? What about this Kermit-Swanian duality? Well, there's a paper by Dan Free and Constantin. That tells us that this Kermit-Swanian duality on the boundary can arise as like the domain wall in the bulk, like implement the like electromagnetic duality symmetry. So recall that the Z2 gauge theory has electric charge and magnetic charge, and there's a Z2 electromagnetic duality that exchange the two kind of particles, and the domain wall that implements this EM duality exchange symmetry. When it ends on a boundary, it gives rise to the Kermit-Swanian duality symmetry. Okay. So now let's try to use this setup to explore some dynamical implication. For instance, let's try to ask, suppose a system has this easing symmetry and it's not spontaneously broken, can a system be in the symmetric gap phase? Namely, can a system be gapped while preserving this easing symmetry? And we can rephrase the question as, is there a gap boundary of this TKFT in the bulk, named the Z2 gauge theory, that preserve this EM duality symmetry? And we already talked about what are the gap boundaries of TKFT. So there are two kinds of gap boundaries in the TKFT. So either is the gap boundary where the electric charge is condensed, or is the gap boundary where the magnetic charge is condensed. And neither of them are invariant under the EM duality symmetry. And therefore, we conclude that there's no gap boundary of the TKFT in the bulk that can preserve the EM duality symmetry. In other words, there's no Lagrangian subgroup lies invariant under the EM dual D-symmetry. And therefore, if any 1 plus 1 D system has Eosinophil symmetry and the symmetry is not spontaneously broken, it cannot be in the like gap phase, symmetric gap phase. So that's the conclusion you can derive about the symmetry using this bulk TKFT. Okay, so in the rest of the talk, I'm going to repeat the same, repeat a similar argument in higher dimension. So I'm going to focus on a system in 3 plus 1 space and dimension with some non-invertible symmetry. And it can live on the boundary of a TKFT in 4 plus 1 dimension. Now, this kind of higher dimension, like TKFT, like 5 dimension TKFT, actually have been studied by Theo Johnson Free and Matthew Yu in many papers.
So in the previous slide, what's the argument for saying there's no other gapped boundary for TKFT?
Right, so the TKFT has 3 non-trivial particles. So one is the electric charge, I think it's here. The other is the multi-charge, and the other is the dion. Now, the electric charge and multi-charge are bosons, but the dion is a fermion. So the dion cannot condense on the boundary wall because it's a fermion, but the electric charge and multi-charge can condense. And if you condense electric charge or magnetic charge, it can make a theory trivial. So there are only 2 kinds of possible boundaries. Yeah, like gap boundaries. Yeah, because dion is a fermion, cannot condense.
So this M boundary actually corresponds to the case where the IC symmetry is spontaneously broken.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So normally for anomalies, you would say, if you allow one to be spontaneously broken, then you can gap it out. But here it seems like the number is different, like you see. Even if you allow the IC symmetry spontaneously broken, it's still not the gap boundaries. Is that right?
Well, I mean, the spontaneous broken phase is like the e-condensed phase. So whereas you have a Z2 global symmetry. And maybe that depends on duality frame, but one boundary you have like spontaneously broken, the other one, yeah.
So I mean, you want to say that there's an anomaly of this non-invertible symmetry, but it's like, seems like a stronger statement than anomaly of an invertible symmetry, because even spontaneously breaking the part of the symmetry doesn't help you.
Well, I mean, you can definitely, I agree with that, yeah. But I mean, in this talk, I'm just going to talk about non-invertible symmetry and their anomalies, yeah. Because in general, you can have a symmetry that just contains non-invertible symmetries, but not other symmetries, yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
So if you allow spin TQFTs and super functions, you should be able to condense fermions, right?
Right, but then you have to change the theory, right? You have to change the symmetry. Now we have additional thing. So here I'm going to, so throughout the discussion, I'm just talking about boson existence. Yeah.
I know that you were trying to like answer like the dynamics question. But what, like, why not answer it in the fermionic context? Is there?
And we can also do that. I mean, I'm just trying to illustrate this principle using the, like this, well, just using boson existence.
Okay, but can you say like a sentence or two about like any subtleties in the fermionic case?
I mean, in principle, you can consider spin TKFT or like more complicated TKFT for sure, like with other structure. You can also discuss similar things about like quantum Lagrangian subgroups, like quantum criteria for gap boundaries. Yeah, but in this case, you will have to input the information about spin structure and it's just complicated map. Complicates the matter, and well, I'm just trying to focus on this like simpler setup with for all the systems that are like bosonic.
Okay.
Yeah. Everyone's happy? Okay. I guess I will just try to go through it. Okay, So a general TKFT in in 5 dimension can have lots of operators, like can have like line operators, surface operator, volume operator, lots of operators. And on the first look, it seems to be a very complicated theory, but actually there's a very simple structure. So let me try to explain that. So let me focus on like 5 dimensional TKFT that where all the particles are bosons, you know, because if some of the particles are fermions, can obtain by the gauging fermion parting something TKFT. So let's focus on the case where all the bosons are, sorry, all the particles are bosons. Okay. And in that case, we can condense all the particles, well, because they are bosons. And then we can get a TKFT that does not have any particle. And moreover, well, because every operator have to be braid with like some order operators. So if we condense all the particles, the membrane operator no longer have any like particle to braid. So all the membrane operators will also disappear. So you are left with a TKFT with only like surface operators or loop excitations. So what kind of TKFTs is that? And so actually any five-dimensional TKFT with just surface operators or loop excitations must be described by a two-phone abelian gauge theory. So let me try to explain a little bit. So we can prove that statement by like contradiction. So suppose you have two loop excitation, like let me call S and S prime, such that it obeys some like non-abelian fusion. So if you fuse them, so suppose you can get like lots of outcomes labeled by this small I. Now let's try to shrink the loop excitation. So the loop will become a particle excitation. But this TKFT does not have particle, non-trivial particle excitations. So you just got identity. So you got identity times identity on the left-hand side. But on the right-hand side, we just got a sum of identity. And this equation is only consistent if there's just one term on the right-hand side. So any TKFT with just loop excitations must obey like abelian fusion rule. Like this loop must obey like group load fusion. And such TKFT can be described by a like U1 two-phone gauge theory, like with multiple U1 two-phone gauge theory. So this is the TKFT I'm going to talk about because it can relate to like every other like 5D topological quantum field theory. Okay, so I'm going to focus on the simplest like 5D topological quantum field theory, which is a like two-phone gauge theory with like two-phone gauge fields, so I'm going to call it like B and Bn. And it has this kind of BF action. So we can think of it as, so we can think of the gauge field as Lagrangian multiplier that constrains the holonomy of the gauge field to be like Zn two-phone gauge theory. And similar to the Z2 gauge theory in two plus one dimension, the theory also has like electric loop, a monic loop, and also dynamic loop. And there are also non-trivial statistics between the loops. So as what we did in 2 plus 1 DZ to gauge theory, let's ask what are the topological boundary conditions of this Zn gauge theory in 4 plus 1 dimension. So the topological boundary conditions are the Lagrangian subgroups, namely we want to find a set of operators such that when we condense those operators, the theory becomes trivial. So the trivial theory you can think of as a like a similar theory with two gauge field, but the coefficient is one instead of n. So all the holonomies are constrained to be trivial. And the condensation means that this new gauge field, which I denote with a prime, are related to the previous one by sort of like a change of basis by some integer matrix. And the factor n means that this change of basis matrix will have determinant n. So all the gap boundaries of this Zn two-phone gauge theory in five space time dimension can be labeled by integer 2x2 matrix whose determinant is n. So the condensation operators in the Lagrangian subgroup are just given by like the image of this matrix. Okay. So now we find a gap boundary condition of this bulk TKFT. And now I'm going to input the information about symmetry. So let me focus on a particular non-invertible symmetry in the 3 plus 1 dimension boundary. And this non-invertible symmetry is sort of similar to the Kermit-Swanian duality. So it has this domain wall D. And if we fuse the domain wall with its orientation reversal, you'll get a like, different outcome, which is a sum of operators that's supported on surfaces on the domain wall. And so let me demand that this operator on the surface obey Zn fusion rule. And these operators on the surface are usually said to be generated a, well, they generate a Zn one-form symmetry, where it's one-form symmetry because the surface has codimension 2 in space-time. So we'll ask the question, suppose we know there are some 3-power 3D quantum system with this kind of symmetry. So for instance, this kind of quantum system can be like Maxwell theory or like lattice gauge theory or maybe some standard model like gauge theory. So this kind of symmetry is very common in many systems. So let's try to understand what are the dynamical consequences. Okay. And the book TKFT that describes this particular symmetry is just the Zn two-form gauge theory, like I told you earlier. And this domain world D symmetry in the book is, again, the electromagnetic duality like changed like the electric loop with the magnetic loop. Okay, so those loops are can be described by like the width and surface of those two-form gauge field. Okay. So now let's repeat the same argument as what we did in 2+1D. So let's try to ask if there's a symmetric gap boundary condition for the two-form gauge theory with this that preserves this electromagnetic duality symmetry. So it's the same as asking for, so recall that the gap boundaries are labeled by 2x2 integer matrix with determinant n, which I call it like capital N. And the symmetric condition is just that the EM duality symmetry is compatible with this like 2x2 integer matrix that label the gap boundary. And it can just solve this algebraic equation and then obtain the result that only when n is like the sum of two complete squares, the TKFT can have a symmetric gap boundary. And in particular, if n is not cannot be written as like a sum of two integer squares, the symmetry, this kind of this kind of symmetry implies that the system cannot be in symmetric gap phase. So if you preserve the symmetry, it has to be gapless. And let me also mention that this kind of a result is also obtained using an alternative argument by Hodan and other people. But the power of this approach is that you can immediately generalize this kind of reasoning to like other kind of non-inverter symmetries. So for instance, instead of electromagnetic duality symmetry, this two-form Zn gauge theory has an entire like SL2 Zn symmetry. Like you can consider more general symmetry like this ST. So the electromagnetic duality is like S transformation, and can consider like more general transformation, and it can derive like new condition on the non-inverter symmetry. Okay. So let me just quickly mention. Okay, so let me just try to. Okay, let me quickly mention. So recall that the structure of a symmetry is not just about fusion rule, but there are more structures like whether the fusion of the symmetry of the topological operators are associative. And so in the symmetry, I'm talking about the non-associativity arise when we fuse this kind of domain wall, like what we call D in the fusion rule. For instance, this two fusion configuration can differ by a physically meaningful minus one. And there's another set of symmetry where the fusion does not differ by a minus one. And one set of symmetry has like non-associative fusion, while the other set of symmetry has associative fusion. So let's ask, what's the difference can it make when the symmetry is not associative? Like, for instance, what kind of what kind of implication can we learn from this like associative minus one here? Now, recall that this domain wall D in the fusion rule can live on the boundary of some like invertible symmetry in the TKFT. For instance, if the symmetry is this Ising symmetry, and D live on the boundary of a like Z2 domain wall that implements electromagnetic duality symmetry. And the associator of D, like this minus one or plus one here, is the same as where the domain wall in the TKFT has this kind of associator. Okay. And it's known that such associator for like Z2 domain wall in TKFT are classified by like SPT phase with Z2 symmetry. And because there are actually two different SPD phase with Z2 symmetry in like 2+1 dimension, like when the symmetry is Ising symmetry on 1+1 dimension, there are two SPT for Z2 symmetry in 2+1 dimension bulk. You have two different associators for this non-invertible symmetry on the boundary. And more generally, the associators of this kind of non-invertible symmetry can be classified by some SPT phase in the bulk, in the bulk TKFT. Okay. And so if you want to ask, what happened, like what happened if the symmetry has non-trivial associator, we just ask if we like stack additional SPD phase in the bulk TKFT, does it change like what kind of boundary dynamics does the TKFT the bulk TKFT has? So that's the way to think about associator in terms of the bulk TKFT. Okay. So let's try to like do some well. So let me explain that a little bit. So I mentioned that there are some SPD phase in the bulk. That imply the boundary cannot be like symmetric guard phase. But for most like finite, if the symmetry is actually finite group symmetry, the SPD phase in the bulk can be realized, can always be realized by like a symmetric guard phase on the boundary. So this is the work by like Wang Wen and Witten. But there's certain, well, so there are certain special set of like SPD phase, even for finite group symmetry. So those SPD phase are called beyond group cohomology SPD phase. There are some examples of such SPD phase that does not have a gap bound, like symmetric gap boundary. So, well, let me try to give an example. Actually, I'm running out of time. So let me give you an example. So suppose the SPD phase is in like phi space and dimension. And it's a SPD phase for, well, let's say maybe Z4 symmetry or Zn symmetry. And the SPD phase can be described by an effective action of the background gauge field of the symmetry. So I'm going to call it capital A. And it's not just, so beyond group cohomology SPD means that in the effective action, you have some dependence on the, like a manifold, like the spacetime manifold. So P1 is the Poincaré class of the of the manifold, and you can try to derive some contradiction for having a like TKFT on the boundary on the boundary of this SPD phase. So the reason is that the partial function of the TKFT obeys some positivity condition, I mean unitary TKFT. Like for instance, if the manifold, it can be written as the norm, if the partial function can be expressed as the norm of some state in the unitary TKFT, it has to be positive, in particular, it has to be non-zero. And you can show that if the system has this kind of like gauge gravity anomaly, under a transformation, like on K3 manifold, the partial function will change by a phase, in particular, it has to be vanished if this phase is non-trivial. And that contradicts with the property of partial function in unitary TKFT. So, it's an example where having this anomaly, like anomaly described by the bulk SPD phase, means that the system cannot be in like symmetric guard phase. So basically, I want to convey that the choice of associator as described by this like SPD phase in the bulk also affect whether the boundary can be like a symmetric guard boundary. Okay. Okay, so let me mention one technical detail. So far the setup we are talking about is like the symmetry. The system with symmetry lives on the boundary of TKFT. But in reality, like in all quantum systems, like we love, the system is like well defined by itself. Does not really need a TKFT. So if you want to derive some dynamical like constraint on symmetry on the system from the symmetry, we have sort of got rid of this auxiliary like bulk TKFT in some way. And the way to get rid of this bulk TKFT is by something called like choosing a polarization. So let me tell you what it means. So choosing a polarization just means that like choosing another topological boundary condition of the TKFT, which I draw in blue. And the original theory on the boundary of the bulk is this red line. And this gray region is the Bokti KFT. So once you choose such topological boundary condition, like the blue side here, you can shrink the Bokti KFT. Well, the TKFT is topological, so you can shrink the Bok region. And that will like collide the left side, like the original theory on the boundary, this red side with the blue side, which is the choice of topological boundary condition. So the choice of topological boundary condition is referred to as a choice of polarization. And after you collide the two sides and get rid of this bulk TKFT, you got a well-defined like theory on the boundary, which is called the absolute theory. So that's the way to obtain a like well-defined theory without the need to attach to a TKFT.
Sorry, when you say topological boundary condition, you mean symmetric gap? Or?
No, general.
So any boundary.
So any topological boundary condition does not have to be symmetric. I mean, it has to be gap because it's topological, but it does not have to be symmetric. So once you made a choice, you can define what define like absolute theory does not need a bulk. Because this boundary is like topological, so if this red boundary is symmetric and gap, if you collide, then you also got a symmetric gap theory as your absolute theory. So you can make any choice of polarization here, like any choice of topological boundary condition here, and that does not affect whether this like the red boundary here is symmetric gap or not. Okay, so I think I'm sort of running out of time, but let me just say that. So let me just try to summarize what I tell you so far. The criteria of this like a yellow boundary here that separate the symmetric gap phase and symmetric gap phase. And the criteria, there are two kind of components in the criteria. So first, we need to ask if the TKFT has a symmetric topological boundary condition, namely whether TKFT has a symmetric Lagrangian subgroup. So that's one criteria. Another criteria is whether the symmetry has non-trivial like associator. So the associator is sometimes called Fermi Schrödinger indicator, but it's just associator. And like whether this associator can be an objection to having a symmetric gap phase, like this beyond group homology SPD phase. So those are two objections that can mark this like boundary separating the symmetric gap phase and symmetric gap phase. And I think I'm running out of time, but let's see. So let me just mention that you can also mark the boundary like separating the trivial dynamics, the short range entangled dynamics, with the like a long range entanglement symmetry gap phase. And you can also derive the criteria that separate these two regions using this bulk TKFT. And it has to do with the polarization I told you earlier. I think I'm done here. Okay, so let me just mention that. Let me just give you an idea like what kind of criteria it is. Okay. So the criteria that separate these two regions is the following. So first you have to choose, so the first criteria is about the existence of a polarization or the existence of a general topological boundary condition. So such topological boundary condition is also labeled by a Lagrangian subgroup of the TKFT. And the criteria is whether this subgroup intersects trivially with the Lagrangian subgroup for this, like if the symmetric Lagrangian subgroup in this symmetric gap phase. So previously I already tell you that the criteria to have a symmetric gap phase is to have a symmetric Lagrangian subgroup. So we have this I'm going to call it lambda here. And if in addition to having this symmetric Lagrangian subgroup, the TKFT also has another Lagrangian subgroup, which I'm going to call it lambda po here, that labels the polarization or label the other like topological boundary condition as such that intersects trivially with the previous Lagrangian subgroup, then it can have then the symmetry can be realized in a short range entangled state if the associator is trivial. And if the associator is non-trivial, you have, there are additional criteria. And those two criteria tell you whether the symmetry can be realized in the short-range entangle system. Yeah. So let me just wrap up. Okay, so the idea I want to convey to you is that this book, Topological Quantum Field Theory, is a powerful tool to study dynamical implications of like novel symmetries for the in the quantum in general quantum systems. And so we have utilized this kind of view, like this kind of book, Topological Quantum Field Theory, to study dynamical implications for like various novel non-invertible symmetries that can be present in like many systems, like standard model-like theory, lattice gate theory, and lots of theories. And it has lots of advantages. For instance, it gives a simpler method that can reproduce known results in 1+1 dimension. It also gives you new results in like higher dimension, like 3+1 dimension. And let me also remark that some of the important questions for people studying TKFT is to understand the dynamics of, well, so let me rephrase that. So it's important to understand the property of TKFT to derive or like sort of make some dynamical implication prediction for like general quantum system. So for instance, it's important to know what are the topological boundary condition for TKFT. And it's also important to know what kind of like operators in a TKFT, and what kind of anomalies can be realized in a TKFT. So I will just stop here. And take questions. Thank you.
Question?
Yeah.
So you mentioned many criteria for having for the system, for the original system to be to have some kind of dynamics. Are these criteria all sufficient and necessary conditions?
Yeah. We believe those are the.
And in three, you mentioned the examples in 4+1D. In 3+1D, there will be particle excitations and loop excitations.
Yeah.
Using a similar argument, would I say?
Yeah, I can also do the same thing for any dimension. I can do it, I don't know, for like 2+1D system with some novel symmetry, it can be described by some like topological quantum field theory, 3+1 dimension. Yeah.
But if the topological quantum field theory is in 3+1 dimension, and then if I condense all the bosons, do I have anything left over?
Well, I mean, you can explore various stuff. If you condense a boson, you can get some SPD phase, right? And you can ask what are the possible boundaries for SPD phase?
SPD is the only thing I can get.
Well, it depends on system. Well,
what loops will be confined, right?
Well, that depends on what kind of system you want to talk about. So for instance, there are some statements about the classification of 3+1D TKFT. Like some people believe that they are just the most general like bosonic TKFT in 3+1D just obtained by like gauging some symmetry in some Fermi-like SPD phase. So if you condense all the particles or maybe you have to do some trick, you can get like a Z2 like gauge theory emergent fermion, or maybe just got a SPD phase. Yeah. And then you can go on to study what the topological boundary condition for the theory. Yeah.
But if I do condense all particles, confined, right?
Yeah, that depends on the TKFT, yeah. And for instance, if the TKFT has an emergent fermion, you might worry about how you can condense the particle.
There's another fermionic systems with local fermion.
Yeah, I can do that, sure. Yeah, sure. I mean, you can play the same trick for any TKFT, yeah.
And in that case, what the loops will be confined?
Well, if you condense all the particles, the loop will be confined, you got to achieve like short-range entangle SPD phase as your TKFT.
Yeah.
And then you can go on to like study what kind of like topological boundary condition for this SPD. Yeah.
Thanks.
Go ahead.
Supposing you have a in 1+1 dimension, you have a non-invertible symmetry and some other invertible symmetry. And so I'm asking about the properties of the bulk 2+1D TQFT. Is it always the case that if like you gauge the invertible symmetry, then in the bulk TQFT, the non-invertible symmetry will appear as some sort of anion commutator?
Yeah, I think that should be very general. Yeah. In my examples, this invertible symmetries are like non-anomalous, so you can sort of gauge it. And in the bulk, you'll just have some kind of untwisted gauge theory. But if the invertible symmetries are anomalous, then it will be like twisted gauge theory. Yeah. Go ahead.
So I have nine question about polarization. So the goal is to make some statement about the absolute theory.
Right.
And then suppose you have a fixed absolute theory, and then you want to construct some TQFT, two boundaries, where combined boundary coincide.
Become the absolute theory, yeah.
Can you always find polarization that?
So that would depend on TQFT. So not every TQFT can have a topological boundary condition. But for the TQFT that, well, in my examples, the TQFT always have topological boundary condition. But is that generally true that polarization can exist? So if the polarization does not exist, you cannot talk about absolute theory. You must talk about, we call this theory attached with your TQFT relative theory, some terminology invented by Tenfrey and other mathematicians. So if the TQFT does not have a polarization, it actually means that any system that has the symmetry must live on the boundary of some TQFT. It cannot be just the system on its own.
So the theory that doesn't anomaly that can be realized in that dimension.
Yeah.
Is this a TQFT with polarization?
Yeah. I mean, if you have absolute theory to begin with, then then the TQFT will have a topological boundary condition, so such that when you collide it, you'll get absolute theory. Yeah.
About gap boundary of TQFT. So I understand if you condense some Lagrangian subproblem, you can get a gap TQFT. You can get a gap
boundary. Yeah.
Is it clear, or is it at least known, that that's the only way of getting a gap boundary, even in higher dimension?
Yeah, well, it's more or less understood, yeah. Well, because you can think of gap boundary as like a domain interface from the TQFT to the vacuum, right? And like, it's like, what kind of transition can you get from TQFT to vacuum? It's like, it's by condensing something such that you make the theory trivial.
Okay, so that logic also works here.
Yeah, it logic works everywhere, yeah. Go ahead.
If I consider the fermionic theory in 2D, and for example, we can prove that the torus within NS sector is non-trivial class in the embodied group, does the thin TFT say something in this case because we do not have the bulk geometrically?
I mean, can choose. So this bulk is sort of auxiliary. You can choose any geometry you like, and there are more complications when you include other structures like spin structure or whatever. But in principle, the argument, this logic about this bulk boundary correspondence should work for anything. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think maybe we should wrap it up.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks for all the questions.